Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage from around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district, right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
It's Hump Day Wednesday, and before you get ready to celebrate half the week being done, it's time for an all-new edition of Listen In with KNN. Now, on today's edition of Listen In with KNN, I'll be bringing in an expert on the ATL sports scene as I welcome in Mr. Carvis Jones to the show. And with that, it means it's time to sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in and follow along with the conversation using hashtag Listen In with KNN.
It's time to recognize those individuals that are doing good in the community and making a difference in the sports world. Without further ado, Kelsey presents this week's Do Good Sportsperson Award nominee.
It's now time for my favorite segment of the show, Kelsey's Do Good Athlete of the Week, where today I have the honor and privilege of honoring Mr. Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick never ended up playing in the 2017 NFL season, but guess what? His employment did not stop him from sticking to his promise of donating, get this, $1 million to charity. Yes, $1 million to charity. On January 17th, Kaepernick announced that the last $100,000 would be donated in increments of $10,000 over 10 days. Along with his donations, other notable individuals, yes, celebrities, would either match or donate more than the amount that Kaepernick would to their respective organizations. On Wednesday of last week, guess what? He completed his $1 million goal on the 10th day of his 10 for 10 donation plan. And all Kaepernick donated to 41 different charities who made an impact on communities in many other ways. So the regular season did come and go without Kaepernick ever finding a team, but his philanthropy work continues. And guess what? It looks like he's not slowing down anytime soon. That's why we saw him get the GQ naming him Citizen of the Year. And then, of course, Sports Illustrated presented him with the Muhammad Ali Legacy Award. So congratulations once again to Colin Kaepernick for earning honors as this week's Kelsey's Do Good Athlete of the Week, presented right here on Listen In with KNN on Fox Sports Radio, 1340 AM and 96.9 FM. It's now time for a quick commercial break, and we will be right back with our special guest.
Jerry's Burger Spot has all your Friday night tailgating favorites. From their never-frozen burger, fresh-cut fries, ice cream, and milkshakes, Jerry's Burger Spot offers the best lunch, and if you desire a fresh handmade burger or some delicious ice cream like Mom used to make, stop by Jerry's Burger Spot at 3815 Jefferson Park Road, Prince George, Virginia, right off 36 near Fort Lee. Jerry's Burger Spot. Remember when.
Welcome back to Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district and beyond. It's now time to get into the nitty-gritty of the show as I welcome in our special guest, Mr. Carvis Jones. Carvis, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for inviting me to your show today, Kelsey.
No problem. I'm so excited to have you. And I have to say, when I hear your accent, you remind me so much of home because, you know, my family is from Mississippi and Louisiana, so you're making me already feel comfortable. I love the South.
I do, too, and I've been here all my life, so I love the South, the food, the people, everything about it.
It's perfect. I love it. I love it. I can't wait to go back. We're excited to have you. And before I get into the show with you, Carvis, I want to go through your background. You have such an impressive background, and that way the listeners can get to know a little bit more about you. So is that cool?
Sounds good to me.
All right, cool. So Carvis Jones is a production assistant at Fox Sports South and Fox Sports Southeast in Atlanta. Before joining Fox Sports South and Southeast, Carvis was an engineering operator at WMC-TV in Memphis, Tennessee. Carvis is a member of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated and also of the National Association of Black Journalists and the Atlanta Association of Black Journalists. Carvis has garnered numerous awards and honors over the years. Recently, he was named the United Negro College Fund Rust College Outstanding Young Alumnus of the Year. in 2012 and 13. Other awards he has received over the years include 2003's Who's Who Among Students in American Universities and Colleges, the 2003 All-American Scholar, the 2002 Rust College Male Student of the Year, first runner-up, yes, in 1999, Outstanding Young Men of Marshall County, Mississippi. He earned a bachelor's degree in mass communications and broadcast journalism from Rust College. Wow, you are just so accomplished, though. Even more excited to welcome you on. Are you ready for some sports talk?
I'm ready for some sports talk.
All right. You know, I'm going to go down south. We're going to go down to the A, and I want to hear from you, you know, the latest in the sports news. So I know you have the Atlanta Hawks trying to ball out. They currently sit at 15th in the Eastern Conference, but we both know, Carvis, this just hasn't been their year, so it seems like it's more of a rebuild year. But give us the latest on the Atlanta Hawks, and what's the rest of the season look like for them?
Well, this is a rebuilding year, as you said, with the Atlanta Hawks franchise. Right now, they 16-37. They just coming off a win against the New York Knicks on Sunday afternoon at MSG. Kent Bazemore hit the game winner with 8.5 seconds left in the game. And at the last couple of minutes of the game, I thought the Knicks had the game, but they just made some mental miscues towards the end. And the Hawks capitalized, making some outside threes towards the end of the ball game. And then now the Hawks, they playing tonight against my favorite NBA team, the Memphis Grizzlies, tonight in Atlanta. And like I said, even though Atlanta has won 15 games, but on the positive side, the Hawks have won 5 straight games against Western Conference opponents, and they have won 6 straight against Western Conference opponents at Phillips Arena. So with head coach Mike Budenholzer, who, you know, came from San Antonio before he took the head coaching job in Atlanta in 2014,
right.
So he kind of got a mindset of a Western Conference, you know, mindset. So hopefully, you know, the Hawks can beat the Grizzlies tonight, even though I hate to say that being a Memphis fan, but I think the best is yet to come for the Hawks. And then, like I said, it's a rebuilding year. And like I said, the Hawks, I think, if I'm not mistaken, they have the longest consecutive playoff streak in the Eastern Conference right now. So with a rebuilding
very
year.
Impressive.
Yep, and their first playoff appearance was in 2008 when they had a rookie, Al Horford, and then Joe Johnson and Josh Smith. So with a rebuilding year, it's not, probably not a bad thing for the Hawks. So hopefully, like I said, I don't want to say this in a bad way, but if they can, you know, get into the NBA draft and try to look at the draft, hey, the best is yet to come.
It's a good way to build.
Yes, that's a great way to build. And like I said, that sometimes – getting a player through the draft is not a bad thing because the future looks bright. And then, like I said, the Hawks earlier this year opened up that new training, should I say, they practice facilities at Emory University on the outskirts of Atlanta. So with the new, you know, practice facilities, hopefully Atlanta can land some top free agents in the future. So the future looks bright and the best is yet to come.
I love your optimism about it because I have to be honest with you. When I talk about the Atlanta Hawks, a lot of the time it's more negative. But I think you have to look positive because, of course, they are still trying to ball out. But I think you're right. You have to start looking at next year. And, of course, another thing they have to start looking at is the trade deadline. So, of course, you do want to think about the draft. But the trade deadline is coming up this week on February 8th. And it's been reported that pretty much that the Hawks are looking to trade just about anyone. That came out from Sporting News that just about everyone on the roster is on the block, which is interesting. They said everyone except the rookie, John Collins, is up for discussion. So obviously that shows how much belief they have in him. But that is kind of scary for the Hawks team, you know, when you just don't know what's going to happen. But, of course, I think a trade can happen. But it seems like the problem is right now, Carvis, is the money that the players would want. Bazemore, for instance, that's somebody that a lot of people feel a lot of teams could use. But they're saying the problem is that nobody wants to pay him. That came directly from a league exec. And, of course, I think he's been Atlanta's best player this season. But it's asking a lot for a team to take on $37 million over the next 2 seasons for his contract, right? That's a big, big, big need. So, I mean, what do you think about that? And then also, of course, you have Schroeder. Another person that, of course, you could think about. But he has 3 more years left on his contract. So what do you think about this trade deadline and what Atlanta can do?
In my years of following the NBA, and believe it or not, this is my 17th or 18th season covering NBA basketball behind the scenes. So in the years that I follow NBA basketball, I wouldn't be surprised about any trades that, you know, that would happen. Because, like I said, even though the record don't, you know, say, I said, not the best for Atlanta right now, but there's some decent players on the team. And like I said, John Collins, he's been a positive, you know, force on the team right now. He's averaging 10 points a game. And also, I'm looking at he's averaging 7 rebounds, and he will be in the Mountain Dew Kid Start Rising Stars Challenge that's going to take place during All-Star Weekend. And then second-year player, Torian Prince-Smith, a spark plug, too. He's averaging 12 points a game. And then he's shooting 40% from the three-point line and then averaging 5 rebounds. So, like I said, there's a lot of bright spots for Atlanta. Then Marco Bellinelli, he's shown that he can hit outside shots. And then Dennis Schroeder, this is his second or third full year of being an NBA starting point guard.
Right.
And he's still learning the ropes of being an NBA point guard full-time. And he's made some mental miscues, also known during the season. But then I think one of the problems with Atlanta, from what I've seen, who's the leader of the team? Is it Kent Bazemore? Is he the leader of the team? Like I say, he's a great complimentary player for Atlanta. And I know that sometimes he can be inconsistent at times, but his leadership, and then he has a great personality on the team. And, of course, I think that Under Armour should give Kent Bazemore a lifetime contract, especially since, the face of Under Armour right now is Steph Curry. And I think that Steph Curry probably won had the Under Armour contract without Kent Bazemore because, Kent Bazemore played with the Golden State Warriors early in his career. So he's really good friends with Steph. So, like I said, anything is possible in today's NBA. And like I said, that's a lot of bright spots on the team. And so, like I said, if someone from Atlanta goes to another team, maybe a contender like Cleveland or Toronto or even Boston, it won't surprise me, or even a Western Conference opponent like Golden State or OKC or somebody. So it's all open right now. And like I said, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next few days with the trade deadline looming.
Yeah, it's coming up. It's like I said, Atlanta's that team that really is eager for a trade. So it'll be interesting to see what they do before the trade deadline. But now Atlanta is also in the news because they are officially on the clock to host the biggest game in football. Yes, I am talking about the Super Bowl. The Atlanta Super Bowl 53 host committee on February 5th of this year was handed the host committee responsibilities for next year's Super Bowl from the National Football League and the Minnesota Host Committee at the Mall of America. Of course, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell was there along with other members of the committee, including Executive Director Carl Adkins, Chief Operating Officer Brett Daniels, and the President of the Atlanta Sports Council and Board of Directors Dan Corso. And, of course, the Mayor, Keisha Lance Bottom, was also on hand to represent the city. So the date is set. It will be held on February 3rd, 2019, at Atlanta's Mercedes-Benz Stadium, the NFL announced. So I'm just curious to hear from you. I mean, how big is this for Atlanta? Because this will be, what, their third Super Bowl?
Yeah, this will be their third Super Bowl.
That's exciting.
It sure is. And then the last time the Super Bowl was here in 2000, of course, there was an ice storm that happened in the city that basically paralyzed the city. But Tennessee was in there against St. Louis and was perhaps one of the greatest Super Bowls because, growing up in North Mississippi, we didn't have a pro sports team for the longest time. So when the Titans came along, they came up a yard short in their Super Bowl. But like I said, I'm excited for the city of Atlanta to host this event. And then I guess after what I saw last month with the city hosting the college football playoff national championship game.
Yes.
And what I saw from the fan experience, there was a lot of foot traffic. There were, of course, a lot of Georgia Bulldog fans and Alabama fans with the close proximity of those two schools coming to Atlanta. So with their foot traffic, from what I saw, that I think it was kind of like a dress rehearsal for the Super Bowl next year in Atlanta. So I'm looking forward to it. And like I said, with Mercedes-Benz Stadium, it is a very beautiful facility. I know a lot of people in the national landscape has kind of been laughing at Atlanta because of the situation that happened with the roof before kickoff. And then, of course, President Donald Trump came to town and it was raining and cold that night when the college football playoff national championship game took place. So hopefully the logistics will be worked out. And like I said, it's a beautiful facility. And one of the features I enjoy most about Mercedes-Benz Stadium is the 360-degree degree scoreboard. And then, of course, the retractable roof, which is open
brand new.
Time.
Everything's brand new. And, technology updated in that stadium. It's going to be nice.
And then, of course, we got the windows of Atlanta. So you can also see the Atlanta skyline on one side of the building. So where Atlanta has transformed in the last 50 years from being a regional, southern regional transportation hub into a young international city. Of course, we're the home of the world's busiest airport with Hartsfield-Jackson Airport.
Right.
And of course, earlier, should I say last year, we also opened up SunTrust Park, which is the home of the Atlanta Braves. And then right now, we talked about their house earlier. They're in the process of renovating Phillips Arena. And according to several publications, this is going to probably be the best in-game experience in the NBA once the renovations is complete. And then, of course, they got a bar that's just opened up on the, should I say, on the west end of the end zone, should I say, you know, end zone near Phillips Arena. So they got a bar where fans can watch the game and drink and have fun. And then, of course, there's going to be a barbershop that's going to, I think, be owned by Killer Mike inside Phillips Arena under the next phase of the renovation. So you can watch an NBA game and get your hair cut at the same time. So
basically what I'm hearing from you is everybody needs to go to a game in Atlanta because everything's brand new. And I think, Carmen, it talks about the investment that the city of Atlanta is putting into sports. Just seeing, you know, new stadiums being built, renovations being built. You talked about a bar, a barbershop. They're really into that in-game experience. And honestly, Carmen, I think they're setting the bar high for the rest of the sports cities around the country because they're showing it's all about the fan, right? That's why they have this brand new stadium. And, of course, the team's there. I mean, that's going to help you bring players, I think, to the city, of course, because, again, everything's brand new. And, again, it caters to the fan watching the game. And then, of course, the players also get to play in a brand new place. The Super Bowl is going to be there. I think those tickets, not that Super Bowl tickets ever sell out slow, but I think those are going to be such a hot, high item price ticket. And, of course, there's also so much to do in Atlanta. So I'm pretty sure everybody's going to want to be at next year's Super Bowl, Carvis, in Atlanta.
Absolutely. And then another thing I liked about Mercedes-Benz Stadium, too, that they got, you know, drinking stations where fans can get, you know, free refills on their soft drinks. And then, of course, you know, Coca-Cola is based in Atlanta. So you can drink all the Coke that you want to, and then you don't have to wait in line.
Free refills.
Yes.
That's like music to many people's ears. Because we know how expensive it is to get a drink at a game. So the fact that you get free refills, y'all are doing it.
And actually, and it's real affordable, too, because I think you have $2 hot dogs, you got popcorn. Okay. So Atlanta Falcons, I don't know if you saw this survey or not, but Atlanta Sports, should I say, the Mercedes-Benz Stadium was voted the best fan experience in the NFL this year because of affordable prices of the, you know, concession stand prices. And despite the fact that Chick-fil-A is closed on Sundays, I think they had generated the third highest revenue of any, I guess, concession stand, you know, area inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium this year, too. So those are, you know, those are bright.
And I believe it. I feel like when you have those nice prices that everybody can afford, you're going to make more money. And, I mean, I don't want to compare it to this, but that's why we see these new 4-for-4 meals coming from Checkers and Wendy's, because I think they obviously figured out the way to get more people in to buy food is to make it cheap, because then guess what? More people are going to come in and get the food. And, then, of course, we know how expensive tickets are, so I think the least that you could do is have affordable food so everybody can eat. Because most cities, like here in D.C., Carvis, you better have at least a $20 bill, and that's just going to get you a snack at a game. And mind if you have a family, you might be paying $100 to feed your whole family at a game. And, you know, who knows how much you paid for tickets. So I give props to Atlanta. But now, Carvis, I hope you don't mind to switch it over here to the DMV. I like to kick off my show with my Doing It Big in the DMV segment, and I want to talk about the Washington Wizards. So you have to talk some hoop talk about the Washington Wizards?
Absolutely.
All right, wonderful. So the Washington Wizards are coming over their fifth straight win. Bradley Beal dropped 21 points as the Washington Wizards defeated the Indiana Pacers 111-102. And greatly enough, I love this, Bojan Bogdanovic came back a season-high 29 points because I honestly forgot about him. He's had such a quiet time with Washington this season, but what a big game for him. He had 5 3-pointers made. But the big talk is not even about just the Wizards, but it's about someone that's not playing for the Wizards right now, and that is of John Wall. So since John Wall has been gone, yes, the Wizards have won 5 straight, which is a season high. And right now the Wizards are 0.03 win percentage points behind, guess who? The Cleveland Cavaliers, who own the third spot in the East. But the problem is some people are saying that the Wizards are playing better basketball without John Wall. And then also there's been questions, Carvis, about team chemistry. I mean, Bradley Beal talked about everybody eats, basically, in a sense, saying that the ball's moving well, everybody on the team's getting involved. And it was a tweet that was later deleted, but Marcin Gortat, the Wizards center, actually put unbelievable win tonight in reference to a past win that the Wizards had. He had great team, in quotes, victory, to which John Wall put LOL. That tweet was later deleted, but Seems like a lot of heat is on the Wizards, and it seems like they're taking a lot of shots at John Wall. I mean, Jalen Rose called this out on TV this week, basically saying, why are so many shots being taken at John Wall with the Wizards winning and him being out on an injury because of his knee? So I just kind of want to hear from you, Carmen. I mean, what do you think this whole talk is about Wizards playing better without John Wall?
Sometimes, like I said, from my experience of watching NBA basketball over the years, usually it takes time for teams to, you know, build chemistry-wise, and then sometimes being a leader on the floor, you know, it can add a lot of pressure to your other teammates. So sometimes when you don't have that leader on the floor, sometimes you have everybody else play together as a team. You know, the team usually loosens up a little bit and play much more relaxed basketball instead of having the pressure on you when the leader's on the floor. So like I said, John Wall, he's the face of the franchise, and I guess with it, it comes with the territory. So like I said, it may not be a bad thing that he's out, even though he needs to work on his health, you know, with his knee injury and everything. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I always say taking care of your body should be the first and foremost thing that a player needs to think about. And so, like I said, the Wizards have played well without him. And Bradley Beal, he is unbelievable. Got a chance to watch Washington over a week and a half ago when they came here to Atlanta to play against the Hawks. And everybody has played, you know, everybody played together. Then Gortat, he's a monster down there in the post. And then, like I said, that basically when you look at Washington, they think about the backcourt because of him and Bradley Beal, John Wall and Bradley Beal, should I say. And it's just been remarkable just to see what Washington has done so far in the regular season. And then, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see once John Wall comes back how the team responds. So we should wait and see.
Right. And I think you're right. So, I mentioned the last game where, you know, Bradley Beal went off, but, of course, the former Wizard, Bojan Bogdanovic, went off for the Pacers. And it seemed like, I mean, he was the leading scorer for them, and it seemed like the Wizards did such a good job of team basketball controlling the Pacers. And I think anybody that has been watching the Wizards, yes, we can all say the team is spreading the ball well. Bradley Beal has taken up that leadership role, which I think has been so crucial and so needed. But at the same time, I think we're all still too quick to say, oh, all of a sudden, yes, they're playing better without John Wall. They need to play well without John Wall because, yes, you said it, he's a superstar. He's the face of the franchise. And I think when he's on the floor, so much goes to him. I think the Wizards rely on him a lot. And when he's on the floor, unfortunately, it seems to me like sometimes the starters don't always have that chemistry for some reason. And, of course, sometimes the bench just doesn't show up. So I don't think you can put it all on John Wall. And I also don't think – I don't want to hear all this negative talk why the man's trying to come back from an injury. I mean, he hurt his knee, and we know John Wall – he is John Wall because of his explosive speed. So his knee being injured, you know, is not good for anyone, and I'm glad that he's getting it taken care of. But the Wizards do have to go possibly – 1.5 to 2 months without him, Carvis. So that's huge. That is a huge time to go without your star player. And, of course, we know in the East every game counts because the East is separated by so few games that every position counts, of course, when we start talking to the playoffs. And the Wizards, of course, want to stay in that playoff race. So I'm glad they're playing.
With home court.
Exactly, and everybody wants that, right? And I think it's interesting, though, that the Wizards are averaging 32.2 assists per game since John Wall has been out, and that would be the best mark by any team this season. But I think that just speaks to how the team is all understanding how they all must step out without John Wall. Because, of course, when they come back, you know, you don't want him to come back to a team that's below the 500 mark. No, you want him to come back to a team that's winning. So then when you put him in the rotation, hopefully they can keep winning. But I just don't like all the drama going on. I know Bradley Beal was saying that people were reaching. He was just referring to a movie quote and Paid in Full when he said everybody eats. But he did say, you know, when he says everybody eats, that's their motto when they move the ball. It's fun basketball. He said it keeps the locker room close and it keeps the camaraderie going. So I think that was such, great points that Bradley Beal made. Oh, but we will see. But also the Wizards are in the headlines because we talked about the trade deadline coming up. And the Wizards actually, according to ESPN, Zach Lowe, he reported that they're making a push to trade for Clippers center DeAndre Jordan, which I thought was very interesting because, shoot, you add him to the Wizards lineup, I think then you have a really scary team in the East. But Lowe did note that the team hasn't made any traction. Of course, Jordan is currently averaging 11 points and 14 rebounds per game. With Los Angeles, he's in his ninth year, and he's in the final year of a four-year, $88 million contract. So just curious to hear your thoughts. What do you think if DeAndre Jordan was able to come to Washington? How would that change the team?
I think he would bring explosiveness inside the front court, in the front court of the Wizards offense, because like I said earlier with Gortat, he
Right.
He's a monster down in the post, and he will hurt you down low. And then I guess last year in the playoffs when the Wizards played against Atlanta, he showed that what he can do. And then, like I said, with DeAndre Jordan, with his body frame and his tenacity, he can hurt a lot of people. So, like I said, if the Wizards, if they want to go, you know, go for broke, go for it, because you only have one opportunity. And so embrace the moment. Then, of course, with, like you mentioned, that Jordan is in his last year of his contract. So, for, you know, a team like the Clippers, I think they're trying to rebuild. So, like I said, take advantage of their opportunity. So, you got nothing to lose. So, it'll be interesting to see how that, I guess, trade, if it happens, how it will pan out. Because, you know, we were talking about the chemistry of the team. Sometimes when you bring a new player in, it's going to take a few games for them to,
you
know,
they got
to
get used to the rotation and everything, right? And I agree with you. You can't just think he's going to come and all of a sudden, magic, boom, Wizards are, you know, winning even more. But at the same time, as much as I would like that, I just don't know who they would trade for him. To make that work. That would be interesting, though. But again, it said they haven't gotten any traction yet. But I do like that the Wizards are still trying to look. Because I've always said, honestly, Garvey, that the Wizards just need that third piece to become that championship team in the East. I think they're just a special piece away from getting there. Because, of course, yes, you have Bradley Beal and John Wall, who have been magnificent, magnificent, magnificent players. But I think they just need that third piece, such as when the Wizards had Paul Pierce. I think he was that third piece, even though he was older in his career. They had that spark that they needed. So I think if they could pull in a veteran who could be that third piece, like a DeAndre Jordan, I think the Wizards would be a very scary team in the East. But next up, they will head to Philadelphia as part of a two back-to-back closeout on a three-game road trip. And, of course, we're looking forward to that one. So that one should be a good one. And then also they have tip-off against the Sixers at 8 p.m. after that on Tuesday night. So now I want to go into the biggest game that everyone's probably still talking about. There might still be people calling out of work, Carvis, because of this game, and that is Super Bowl 52. I mean, what a game it was. I know there were some people who thought going in that the Patriots were going to be the Patriots, right? And then people just didn't know what the Eagles would do. They were the underdogs. They did have a backup quarterback. But little did we all know that we were in for, I think, one of the greatest Super Bowls that I've ever seen, and I'm sure a lot of people can agree with that. 41-33 win as Philadelphia got their first ever Super Bowl and their first NFL championship since 1960. Wow, talk about a city in need, and they can finally brag about the ring that they have. And then the Super Bowl was crazy with so much offense. They smashed the record for most combined offensive yards, 1,151 in a Super Bowl. Wow. So watching this game, I mean, just tell me, what were your overall thoughts of this year's Super Bowl and how did it compare to years past?
I think, actually, believe it or not, I was actually pulling for Philadelphia to beat the Patriots this year because, like you said, that I think a lot of people didn't expect the Philadelphia to win the game because Nick Foles started their quarterback and, you know, Philadelphia's played well all season long until the injury of Wentz came along, Carson Wentz. So, sometimes when you are the underdog, there's not a lot of pressure on you to perform. So, like I was saying earlier, that sometimes when you play loose and you don't have nothing to lose, great things will happen. And I think that with what happened last year with New England coming back from 28-3 to beat the Falcons last year, so I think a lot of New England fans, not to say it in a bad way, but I guess they felt they were entitled to win this year's Super Bowl because of Tom Brady, who on Saturday won the NFL MVP award. So I think they were just celebrating a little bit too early, but you got to win. In order to win, you got to play on the field, and it's not given to you.
Exactly right. I mean, and that's what I think we saw. We saw a game. And I love that. We saw the underdog Eagles take chances. I mean, I think a real turning point in the game, and Chris Collinsworth, you know, pointed this out, was when Coach Doug dialed up a decision on 4th-and-1 to make that pass to quarterback Nick Foles, which resulted in a touchdown right before the half, giving the Eagles a 22-12 lead. And honestly, I think the rest of that was history. I think the Eagles went from playing not to lose to playing to win after that play. And I mean, just what a game it was. I think the Patriots, you know, they were good, but Nick Foles and the Eagles were just better. And you could tell they wanted it more. Now, of course, I said the numbers that offense had the first in this game. It was the most ever of a Super Bowl. So I think offensively, you know, both teams were well. But, again, this was one of the best games. And I think we all wanted that underdog story. I know looking at – there was a map that went out that, you know, asked who people want to win the Super Bowl. Basically, it was like the world versus the Patriots. Because I think so many people are just tired of their dynasty. And you can't disrespect what the Patriots have done with Coach Bill Belichick and, of course, Tom Brady. They've been magnificent, right? But we all know, and especially you, being in Atlanta, we all remember last year's Super Bowl where the Falcons came so close to beating them. But, of course, then we all know what happened. The Patriots came back. And even in this game, I know, we all were watching to see if Tom Brady could lead this great comeback, and he didn't. The Eagles' defense came up huge, making Tom Brady make that fumble. So, I mean, I think it was just a wonderful game. And then I think beyond the game, I mean, did you see some of the celebrations going on? I mean,
yeah.
Philly literally went all out. I mean, busting through our windows. They were dancing on top of garbage trucks. I don't even know if you saw the disgusting video. There was a drunk person eating horse poop, which I still cannot get over that video. I wish I would have never watched it. Poles being torn down. But, do they deserve this, Carvis? I mean, they finally got their Super Bowl win for the city of Philadelphia.
I understand Eagles fans celebrating their first Super Bowl win, and that's all great and everything, but I guess in the age of social media now where people can do whatever they want to, it kind of sends a shaky message, because I guess, you know, a lot of people, especially young people watching this stuff, so they're going to think that the absence of a few adults is all right with them. And like I said, I think it's a safe way to celebrate a Super Bowl victory and not just,
right,
you know, turn over cars and breaking windows.
Right. You don't have to tear up a city to celebrate.
Yes. There are other ways. And then they got a parade, I believe, scheduled for Thursday with 2 million
yes.
fans anticipated. So I think that way people can celebrate their, you know, the Eagles winning the Super Bowl that way, because I know a lot of people in Philadelphia, they love their sports teams, whether it's the Eagles, the Phillies, the 76ers, or the Flyers, but
right.
I think it's a long time coming.
Right. I think the Eagles finally got it. And Philly needed that. Because, I mean, if you go to Philly, you know it's a sports town, right? They love their sports
yes.
team, as you just said. But I think you're right. You have to celebrate in the right way. I know we all are big sports fans, well, most of us, right? And we love our sports teams. But, you know, I mean, you don't ever want to see people uprooting trees or tearing down poles, because then, you know, I mean, you're hurting your own city. And then your own taxpayer dollars are probably going to have to go back in to fixing that.
To clean it up.
Right, so it's just like, it's, and then also I hate when I hear people having to be taken to the hospital, which was reported some people had head injuries, lacerations, and then of course you had alcohol intoxication. And speaking of alcohol intoxication, celebrities also joined in on the fun, and I think Kevin Hart was probably the one that got most famous from his celebration, because he probably celebrated too early. Of course, he went on to the NFL Network interview. He pretty much interrupted it. You could tell he was drunk. He said he was drunk, and then he accidentally dropped an F-bomb live on national television.
Wow.
That was crazy, right? I mean, you could tell he was so happy, right? We know he represents Philly. He's from Philly. But, I mean, what do you think of Kevin Hart? Was that too far, or was it just Kevin Hart being Kevin Hart? I mean, what did you think about that overall situation?
I think it's both. And like I said, I'm not an alcohol drinker myself. If I have to celebrate, I drink at home, because I guess, you know, working behind the scenes where a lot of people look up to me, especially back in my hometown. So if they see me cutting up on national TV or even on local TV and everything, I can't look at myself in the mirror and say I did this. So
right.
I have to be real reconnaissance of the actions that I do. And like I was saying earlier, that you got a lot of young people watching this stuff. And what kind of message are you sending young people when you do, you know, things like that? So
Like I said,
it's just very interesting. Like I said, I grew up in a, you know, I guess in a Christian environment. So I always try to do things that's pleasing to myself and other people. So like I said, that sometimes you just have to be real careful with some of the things that you do, because, like I said, who you going to tell somebody to do X, Y, and Z while you can't do the same thing yourself? So it's just interesting, like I said. Especially with social media now, you definitely have to watch what you're doing, because you never know who's watching you.
Right. Everybody can see it now. And then also now everywhere it gets spread. So you can't just make a mistake now and, you know, nobody see it. Now everybody sees it, right? Because even if they didn't stay up late to watch that post-game interview, guess what? It was on social media, so it was right in their face. And I think, of course, Kevin Hart, I think he gets a pass in the sense because he's a comedian, though I don't think it was right. But, you know, he's a comedian, so I feel like when people saw him, it was just a funny thing for them. But I think you're right. We do always have to think about our actions, just because, of course, I mean, I want everybody to celebrate, but that's something that is going to always be online now, you know, and that people can look up, his kids can even look up, you know, and see. But also,
everything on the internet lives forever, so
yep,
you can't
delete
it.
Doesn't go away. Right, it's always there. Like 100 years from now, I mean, who knows what technology will be? But it's still going to be there. So that's such a good point. But he wasn't the only celebrity that got in on the fun. We also had Sylvester Stallone, of course, tweeting, "Yo, Eagles, you did it, you did it, Sylvester Stallone." I mean, that was. And we saw Will Smith dancing on Instagram. Bradley Cooper, of course, was celebrating with the Eagles owner in the suite. Kobe Bryant. He had a fabulous reaction to the final play of the game. It was just a fun game overall, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like, all the celebrities were getting in on it.
Then, talking about Sylvester Stallone, of course, the statue of him right beside the Philadelphia Museum of Art. So,
yes.
I guess he's the face of Philadelphia forever because of his, you know, portrayal of Rocky Balboa and Rocky. So,
we all love Rocky.
Yes, especially when I went up to Philadelphia in 2011 for the National Association of Black Journalists Convention and just do the rocket stuff myself. It was just a surreal moment. And actually, I was nervous, but it was a great feeling.
Because, I mean, it's so huge and so important. And I actually have never got a chance to take a picture by that, but I'll be going to Philly this June, so better make sure I will be getting that. And hopefully some Eagles fans can come join me and say hi if they're still celebrating come June.
And juggling Long Benjamin Franklin Parkway, too. So
I have to make sure. It's a great city. I really do. I love Philly. I love how everyone's getting in on this win. And then talking about everyone getting in on the win, I want to go back to another thing about the Philadelphia Eagles that everyone's talking about, and that was their team introduction. They got a lot of noise on social media because even though rapper Meek Mill is currently locked up, you could still feel his presence on the football field when the Philadelphia Eagles ran out to the sounds of the Philadelphia rapper's legendary Dreams and Nightmares intro as they were introduced to the Super Bowl, and I think it was so great that they did that. I love what Brandon Graham told NFL.com. He said, if you're going to go with the Philly song, that's the one you're going to go with. And he said that's why they decided to run out to that song. And his fellow defensive end, Derek Barnett, said running out to the song was a way to show love to the rapper who's been behind bars after being sentenced to 2 years in prison for a probation violation on November 6, 2017. He said, Meek, you know he's locked up right now, so we have to hold the city down for him. It just gets us going. It gives us good energy and just a little extra juice. Who could be wrong with extra juice? So what do you think about Philly's intro, Carvis?
Very interesting. Like I said, I know over the last few months, I've been watching the events, I guess, unfold with this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a very controversial situation.
Yeah. And I guess sometimes when people find themselves in a precarious situation, sometimes those little events can, you know, be a little momentum for, you know, for teams and stuff. And like I said, that sometimes that with the songs and stuff, they can, you know, players can feed off the energy after what they listen to. So, nothing but mad love for Philadelphia showing solidarity to one another.
Yeah, and I think that was great. And I just wish we could know what Meek was, you know, when he heard the news about it, like, you know, what were his exact thoughts and words? Because I know that had to mean a lot from him. Because obviously where you grow up means a lot to all of us. And so, you know, to get that hometown love, there's nothing like hometown love. I think that's fabulous. So I thought the Eagles, I think they definitely won the introduction part. And even the fans, you could hear it. More fans were cheering for them when they came out during the introduction than the Patriots. But speaking of performances and people getting judged for their performance, Pink, who sang the national anthem, before she even started singing, Carvis, she got criticized because if you were watching the TV close, you saw her quickly spit something out of her mouth. And there was a lot of speculation about what it was. Many people, of course, thought it was gum because, of course, a lot of people chew gum. But a lot of people felt it was nothing that was funny or that you should do on national television. She actually later said it was something for her throat because she had been suffering from the flu in the days leading up to her performance, which was something that she had spoke about. And she said she was trying to practice the flu away. And she basically said that. She said she had been waiting to sing the song since 1991 when she saw her idol, Whitney Houston, own this song. She said, and now that it was finally her chance had come, she said, and it just so happens that the chance came that she had two small Petri dish kids who literally coughed into her mouth and rubbed their snot on her cheek, and that's how she caught the flu. So she said, you know, she didn't mean, I don't think, to put that out on TV. But it just happened because she had the flu. But I kind of want to hear your thoughts on how she did singing the anthem because I think that's the more important part. What did you think about her performance? Because I think it's been 50-50 on social media.
And when this is Penny Esmond, matter of fact, when she sung the national anthem, I was driving on Interstate 285 getting ready to go to a Super Bowl party for one of my white friends. And so when I heard it, one of the first things that came to my mind, that it sounded real similar to Whitney Houston's 1991 rendition of Star Spangled Banner. So
right.
She did a phenomenal job. And like I said earlier, that health for anybody is the most important thing that you should be taking care of. Because like I said, I know you want to do it for the fans and everything, but I guess that sometimes fans feel that people are kind of like invisible. And as you know, that celebrities are people just like you and me. And like I said, she overcame the odds and stuff and performed the national anthem with precise precision. And like I said, I think hands down, Whitney Houston's performance of the Star Spangled Banner was probably be the best Star Spangled Banner
ever
in Super Bowl history. Because, you know, the United States at the time when Whitney sung the Star Spangled Banner was going through the Persian Gulf War.
Right.
And like I said, it's just amazing. Like I said, I'm just happy that Pink, she took advantage of the opportunity when the opportunity presented itself. Because like you said, it's a once in a lifetime experience. And sometimes people don't get that opportunity again. So she nailed it, and great job. And kudos to Pink on a great performance during the national anthem. And like I said, with social media, with so much backlash and stuff, I just wish that people give other people a chance and stuff instead of saying the first thing that comes to their mind.
Right, social media. But, you know, honestly, social media is good and bad, right? You're going to always have haters. I don't care who you are. It'll just happen. And when you're a celebrity, it's just even more exemplified. Now, I'm one. I can't sing. My sister is the one that sings the national anthem, so I don't really think I can talk about anyone's performance because I can't do better myself. But I thought she did fabulous, and especially then to find out that she had the flu before that and you still found it like that, Pink, I'm giving her her props. And I'm so happy, you know, she had that chance, because just hearing, you know, how much she kind of idolized Whitney Houston's performance and then, basically in a sense paid a tribute to her by singing, trying to sing like her, I thought Pink did well. And props to her. And now I have to go to halftime, though, because another person who has kind of been getting a lot of flack online was Mr. Justin Timberlake, who, of course, did the halftime performance. And I think this is another one that was 50-50 on social media. So I'll let you start, Harvest. What did you think after Justin Timberlake's halftime performance?
Wow. Great question. And like I said, as a person who grew up in North Mississippi on the outskirts of Memphis, Justin Timberlake is the best, I guess, the best thing that happened in Memphis, I guess, on the Memphis music scene since Elvis Presley. So I kind of had mixed emotions with his halftime performance. And like I said, I know he did additions to some of his former songs and then paid a tribute to Prince. And in my honest opinion, Justin Timberlake didn't have any, creativity in the halftime performance. And we haven't seen that in a while. So like I said, it's kind of 50-50. And like I said, I guess another thing that happened before the Super Bowl, whether or not Janet Jackson was going to come to the Super Bowl and perform with him, and especially with the backlash and everything.
Yep.
So I just think that Justin was on his own. And like I said, the reception of it was, like I said, mixed. So like I said, hopefully next time, I think Justin probably learned a few, learned a lesson or two from his halftime performance. So I think when you honor people like Prince and people, I just think that you need some creativity of your own. And I said nothing wrong with paying tribute to people like, past artists and everything. But I guess Justin needs to learn how to use creativity on his own instead of trying to, I guess, imitate some of the people from the past. So that's what makes people great, creativity. Mm-hmm. So use your creativity to your, to the best of your ability. And like I said, hopefully this was a learning experience for him. And then, he got an album that just recently came out, and then he's about to go on a concert tour. So it'll be interesting to see what the reception would be like. And like I said, it's 50-50 for me. And like I said, being a Mid-South native, Justin got a lot of love for people in Memphis and the Mid-South. So 50-50 for me.
For me, and I'm a huge Justin Timberlake fan. Like, I go back to the NSYNC days. That's when I was growing up with the boy bands, right? So Justin, to me, when I was watching this, I felt like I was looking through a lens. Like, I have such high expectations for him. And I will say this. I gave him props for the whole – I thought his whole – all the theatrics of the show I thought were great. All the different, backgrounds and all the different dancers and the lights going up. I thought that was fantastic. But I think performance-wise, I thought – I thought I just expected more from Justin because I know how great he is in concert, and I didn't see that fully during the Super Bowl. Now, I know part of it when he first started wasn't his fault. I thought it was the mics were just really bad, I thought, when he first started. And, of course, that's not his fault. But I just thought overall, like, I was looking for a wow factor, and I just was thinking after he performed, well, I remember this in a couple years. And honestly, I said no. I said no. And I think it's interesting you brought up the Janet Jackson part of it because a lot of people were wondering why he didn't bring anybody out with him because, of course, that's also common now. We see a lot of people who performed in the Super Bowl bring out, you know, another special guest, another special performer. And, of course, Janet, I think we all know, you know, with that, he did get a lot of flack from people, of course, after he was able to come back after the whole scenario with him and her at the prior Super Bowl years before when, of course, the controversy happened. And, you know, a lot of people were like, well, how come Justin gets to come back? My thing with Justin is, for one, I think he should have spoke out more about that incident because I think, you know, he had as much a part of the problem of that incident as Janet. I think it was 50-50 there. But also the Prince part of it, I'm like you. I think I would have loved to see more creativity. I feel like I'm still 50-50 about it because, of course, I do know the part of people who are saying Prince didn't want to come back in the sense that I know a lot of people were talking about the hologram. And, of course, he didn't bring him back in the hologram form. He actually just put him on the video projector form. I don't know if he should have done that, you know, if Prince has made it clear in his family to and people who are close to him that he didn't want to be brought back. But I will say I did love when the city was painted purple. That was my favorite part of the performance, right? Because, of course, it's Minneapolis. You have to do something, I think, for Prince. And that was just beautiful. That's the part of the performance I will remember. But I didn't think it was Justin's best. But I do, like I said, I appreciate everything that went into it. I love the selfie he took with the kid at the end. I thought that was really sweet. And he's a great guy. I don't think you can hate Justin Timberlake. But like I said, just to me, it wasn't one of the best that I've ever seen for a Super Bowl. Because the Super Bowl, you have to bring it, right? Like, it's everybody's watching.
You're the most watched event on television.
Justin, I just think, and you know Justin, like I said, I just think I've seen him do so much better. But at the same time, you know, I appreciate it. I don't think it was horrible. Some people make it seem like it was horrible. I'm not saying that. I just think, you know, it wasn't the best Justin that I've ever seen. But also speaking of Super Bowl halftime, Cardi B actually came into the news when TMZ asked her Saturday night if the National Football League asked her to perform, would she? And she said she would only do so when they hire Colin Kaepernick back. So I want to hear two parts of this question for you, Carvis. For one, do you think they would ask Cardi B to perform the National Football League? And secondly, do you think, you know, Colin Kaepernick will ever come back for her to perform? So now I'll hear from you.
That's a good question. And especially, you know, this year, like I said, Cardi B, and like I said, they're asking the NFL to demand that, which is understandable. But I guess after what happened this past year, like I said, with the National Football League, one of the storylines, of course, the NFL protest and then Colin Kaepernick, whether or not he was blackballed by NFL owners to playing again. And like I said, I guess the marketplace would dictate the actions moving forward. And like I said, it's a touchy subject, and especially with Kaepernick and stuff, and especially with the president, you know, chiming in on whether or not he should come back and then calling, you know, NFL players, you know what. And like I said, I know this is entertainment and show, so I can't say some of the things I want to because of the audience. But hey, but like I said, I just hate that the president interjected himself in the conversation, but I guess what Kaepernick was trying to talk about was, you know, inequalities that he saw among black Americans.
Right.
And I think it kind of alienated some of the, you know, NFL fans and stuff. And I guess that we're going to have conversations like this moving forward. But hopefully, you know, I guess with the storyline and stuff, hopefully there will be an ongoing dialogue going on what will happen next for the NFL. And I guess like I said, with Cardi B, I hope she gets the opportunity to perform at the Super Bowl one day. But like I said, with all the stuff that's going on right now in the NFL, we just have to wait and see what pans out. And then, like I said, with the potential, you know, that they still with the Carolina Panthers. So I'm just anxious to see what the NFL is going to do because I think we need more. And then, you know, with February being Black History Month,
I hope
to see more diversity in the front office in the NFL one day. But like I said, I just think that we just need to have these conversations to continue. And hopefully 5 or 10 years from now, we will see that, you know, we will see who was right and who was wrong in the NFL debate as far as, you know, the protest is concerned. So that's my, I guess, two cents on the issue.
And I appreciate that because, and I asked you this because I know it's an uncomfortable topic, but I think you have to talk about it, right? I think so often so many of us don't want to talk about stuff that makes us uncomfortable, but that's the only way you can find a solution. And, of course, everything's not going to be comfortable. I think life is about challenging you to do and be able to speak your own voice when there is stuff that's uncomfortable. And I think the NFL is going to constantly see this issue coming up because, of course, Jay-Z made headlines when he turned down the invitation to perform at the Super Bowl. Because, again, of the same thing, Colin Kaepernick situation, and then we see Cardi B doing it. And I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see who they ask to perform. And I know Atlanta being picked for the Super Bowl next year, that's a huge topic because Bruno Mars actually recently tweeted out that the NFL should pay tribute to hip-hop culture with whoever they ask to do the Super Bowl halftime show next year.
Yes,
so, of course, I think this conversation is going to come back up. Gucci Mane even tweeted, you know, like, how great would it be, for instance, to see him perform. So it'll be very interesting, I think, because I think the people that they might ask, Carvis, from the hip-hop community, there might be backlash because of this Colin Kaepernick situation. How will the NFL handle it? Will they address it? Or, you know, will they just go with somebody else, you know, if people continue to say they won't perform because of the Colin Kaepernick situation?
And then especially with a city like Atlanta, that's one of the birthplaces of the civil rights movement, then being the home of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So the Super Bowl next year in Atlanta, it would be very interesting to see what happens because, like I said, and of course, on April 4th of this year, the city of Memphis will be, you know, commemorating the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. So, and like I said, with Atlanta being the birthplace of the civil rights movement, and I think we're going to have these conversations to continue. So hopefully, like I said, with Atlanta being the backdrop of next year's Super Bowl, then Roger Goodell and the other NFL owners will have conversations with leaders in the civil rights community, you know, on this issue and talking about what they can do to, you know, make the NFL a place, you know, where people can be involved no matter what race, color, creed, or orientation you are. So, like I said, at the end of the day, we all family, so we're supposed to love one another.
Right. And I honestly, I hope that comes to fruition. I'm the same way. I hope, you know, we come to a point in this country and in sports, you know, where we don't look at people through that lens. Like you said, where anybody, regardless of their race, their sex, their religion, it doesn't matter, you know, that we can all just respect each other. And then again, that we can have those uncomfortable situations because I don't think we should all agree. I don't think it's right if everybody agrees. I think we are supposed to agree and disagree, I think. But I think that's how we can come to a solution on something when we can hear both sides of the issue. So we will look forward to the Super Bowl next year and the NFL season really next year to see how that situation is handled. And now I want to stay on the topic of, we touched on Martin Luther King Jr., but this his name is actually causing controversy right now because, again, in regards to the Super Bowl, Ram's truck is actually under fire now for their Super Bowl commercial in which they use parts of one of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s speeches to sell, yes, people, pickup trucks. A lot of people were mad about this commercial. If you didn't see it, Ram plucked parts of the section of King's drum major instinct sermon that was told 50 years ago to the day of the Super Bowl on Sunday, using it to reinforce the idea that it's Ram's trucks are built to serve. That was their purpose, right? And this was the quote that they used. If you want to be important, wonderful. If you want to be recognized, wonderful. If you want to be great, wonderful. But recognize that he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. There's a new definition of greatness. By giving that definition of greatness, it means that everybody can be great. You don't have to know to serve. You don't have to know the second theory of aerodynamics and physics to serve. You only need a heart full of grace, a soul generated by love. Okay, so this commercial, again, caused lots of controversy because people are like, how are you equating Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech with selling pickup trucks? So, did you see this commercial, Carvis?
I sure did. And when I saw the commercial, I said it was very interesting that, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King's speech came up in the commercial. And like I said, it was kind of, like I said, I was shocked initially when I heard saw the commercial and heard Dr. King's speech. So I guess as a person who's lived in Atlanta for 11 years now, I know that there's been a lot of divide among the King family members, whether it was Bernice or Martin Luther King III and Dr. King, because, you know, the King son, shall I say, Bernice King and the King son, of it, shall I say, posted a tweet within not hours. So after the commercial era, said that they had no affiliation on the commercials. So I think it came down to a decision between Dr. King and Martin Luther King III. And basically, they made that decision to make the commercial era. And like I said, I think in today's time, if Dr. King was alive, I think he probably wouldn't want his name to be used in a commercialized way, because he did say that he wants to be remembered as a person who wants to serve people and help the homeless, to feed the hungry and clothe the naked. So I think Dr. King probably wouldn't have wanted his name to be commercialized in that way to sell a vehicle, because I know that this month being Black History Month, we're supposed to honor the people who came before us and honor those who's making contributions to our society right now. So
I kind of
have mixed emotions about it. And then I was reading one of the local, I guess, media outlets in Memphis that talked about it. In the National Civil Rights Museum came out with a statement yesterday saying that they were signed with the commercial. And of course, you know, the National Civil Rights Museum is part of the Lorraine Hotel in Memphis, where Dr. King gave up his life fighting for the freedoms for garbage workers during the Memphis sanitation strike. And I was kind of, like I said, I was really shocked when I saw the commercial when it came out, because like I said, I understand you want to sell vehicles and cater towards a certain, you know, demographic and a certain base. But I think at the same time that diversity should be an issue in corporate America, because I don't know who was inside that room when it, you know, who came with the decision on Eric Dr. King's message. And like I said, I think diversity is important, because you can eliminate a lot of barriers, because if one of us was in that room, we would probably have, you know, reserved, you know, we would have been reserving, would have told those people who made the decision that you should think about who you're offending or might offend.
Right.
But like I
but
said,
it
I
seems
think
like
at
these
the
commercials
end,
always come out, Carvis. Like, and I'm sorry to cut in, but I think the point is, like, you made such a good point. I think diversity is crucial. You're right, because I think when you have diversity, you have more eyes looking at it, and they might see it a different way, where obviously everybody there thought it was good, and that's why they put it during the biggest game of the year for the whole world to see. But I love some of the points you made. But honestly, I think they had good intent with it, right? I don't think it was malicious. I don't think it was just a publicity stunt. And you made such a great point when you said King III, you know, must have been the one to approve it. And I think that's a whole another complex issue, which I'm sure you know, with the whole King family and what's okay and what's not. And, you know, their family troubles have been out in the public. But I think honestly, it could have been solved by this. My problem with the commercial was this fact. They didn't just come out at the end and say, you know, Ram celebrates Black History Month and the legacy of Dr. King. I think if they had said something like that along the lines to kind of tie up the message, that's better than just making it seem like you're just putting his speech, you know, that was about, you know, all the stuff he believed in about serving each other and equality, and turning it into just, you know, oh, this is Dr. King's speech, you should buy this truck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they didn't tie the message together. And again, I think they could have just solved it simply with saying, you know, somehow Ram's trucks celebrates
Black History Month.
Right. And then, you know, and celebrates like the legacy of Dr. King or something like that, because I've seen that be done. And I think that would have helped with the controversy, you know, than just, that's like me and you, you know, getting Dr. King's speech and, I don't know, we're selling something and we just throw the speech behind it. And it's kind of like, well, what are you trying to say? And I think that was the question that people had. But I think, Tarvis, it goes back to you, what you said, diversity. Because maybe if it had been more diversity, then someone would be making the points that we're making and they would have kind of looked more at it. But it just seems like time and time again we see these commercials. I mean, there's the commercial I know with the young woman who, you know, was taking off her shirt. And she started off as African-American lady, and then she became a Caucasian woman. You know, it just seems like there's so many commercials that offend so many people, and for some reason nobody in the room got it, and they come out. You know what I mean? So it seems like it's something that keeps happening again and again and again. But it goes back to one word. I think you said it. Well, diversity. We need to somehow diversify everywhere. I think everywhere. And this is why diversity is such a beautiful thing, and it's why it's a needed thing. And that's why I think it's great we live in a country where we have so much of it. But now let's put it all to use. Let's put it in these top corporate offices. Let's put it in all these decision rooms. So hopefully a decision can be made where you won't have so much backlash. Because honestly, I mean, I don't know what it's going to do for Rams. They might have really offended a lot of people, and who knows? That might hurt their bottom line. And we all know it goes down to your bottom line. And that's not the way you want your Super Bowl commercial to go, especially when you have to pay all that money for a spot, right? The last thing you want is all the backlash from it. It's crazy. But now on a lighter note of commercials, which one was your favorite overall? Because I know me personally, I love the one of Eli And Odell Beckham Jr. and the dancing and the singing. I thought that one was great.
Yeah,
that's the one I remember most.
Yeah, yes. Dirty Dancing, Ben.
Yes.
Yes, and I think my favorite was the E-Trade, even though I'm kind of like in my, you know, in the middle point of my career, but I guess now with the landscape of this country where people are, you know, older citizens, you know, senior mm-hmm. citizens are working longer and everything, so
right.
they're becoming an integral part in our, you know, national landscape. And like you said, I think I like the NFL commercial with Eli Manning and Odell Beckham, and then, of course, you know, Eli, you know, he's been in the NFL a long time.
Right.
And I can still remember when Eli played, you know, quarterback at Ole Miss. So,
mm-hmm.
and like I said, it was unbelievable. Like I said, with Eli done so much for the New York Giants franchise as quarterback, helped them to win 2 Super Bowls. So, I think
right.
that commercial with him and Odell stands out to me more than anything. And like I said, hopefully Eli would get back on his feet if he decides to come back to play for the
right.
Giants next year. And like I said, that was the best commercial to me during the Super
yeah,
Bowl.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. I really
and
did.
Then Odell, his reaction, I guess, during Super Bowl Sunday was priceless.
Yes. He's just fantastic. I think he's
yes.
just an all-around, you know, great person. Of course, nobody wanted to see him get injured, but I think, you know, this – he's been making the most of it. And like I said, that commercial, I think, just, you know, brought back who he was. And it's great always to see players' personalities, you know, come out. And I think that's what was so great about that commercial. And I love that Eli really pushed himself to doing it. And he made us all laugh. And honestly, I think it made people love Eli even more, you know, than they already do. Because I know he has a lot of fans and a lot of support. So that was just interesting. But, oh, my gosh, this show is going so fast. So I hope you don't mind if we skip the rest of the Super Bowl talk, because I want to go down to some other big news that made the headlines in football, and that is the 2018 Pro Football Hall of Fame class. Wow. What a list. So, I mean, Randy Moss, Ray Lewis, Brian Urlacher, Brian Dawkins, Terrell Owens, Jerry Kramer, Robert Brazil, Bobby Bethard. I mean, what a list we have. And I think the name that probably stands out to you most, and really to everyone, is that of Terrell Owens, because finally, Carvis, the wait is over, right? The third time was the charm. He finally got in. We all know he has the credentials, right, to go to Canton.
He had
1,078 career receptions, people, 15,934 yards, 156 touchdowns in his 16-year career. He played for the 49ers, the Eagles, the Cowboys, the Bengals, and the Bills as a receiver. But we all know he's been snubbed, right? And we know it's probably because
yes.
of the relationship he had with the media. But what were your thoughts when you heard T.O. finally getting in?
I was actually happy that he got the nod because, like I said, either you love him or hate him. Terrell Owens definitely
mm-hmm.
was one of the faces in the NFL franchise for the most part when I was in college. And then later on his career, should I say, I guess I'm showing my age because I can remember he played with the 49ers towards my, you know, during my high school years and then
mm-hmm.
performing during my college years. So I think the moment that stands out for me, and like I said, Terrell Owens during his NFL playing career was a very polarizing figure, whether he had beef with Donovan McNabb. But the moment that stands out to me when he was a member of the Cowboys, I mean, not the Cowboys, but the member of the 49ers, the game against the Cowboys, he came down to midfield and stepped on the star, and then just, I guess, showing out in front of the Cowboys fans at Texas Stadium. And then the Cowboys almost had a fight with them. So that moment
mm-hmm.
stands out to me. And I still laugh when I think about that moment now. And like I said, Terrell Owens, one of the best wide receivers in the game.
Yes, I mean, unless I say love him or hate him, he did his job on the field. And honestly, he brought
yes.
everything. I think we need those players. I don't think we all want those players, you know, who just do everything they're supposed to do, say the perfect interview that media likes. I think you kind of need those controversial figures. And he was real. I'm all for people keeping it real. Don't be someone you're not. And I think that's what Terrell Owens was. And he is one of those personalities, and we all know people like that. If somebody has a big personality, you either like them or don't like them, I feel like. It's usually one of the two. You're usually not in the middle ground. And I think that's why T.O. was snubbed. But I'm glad he's finally getting in. And what great company he has. Ray Lewis,
yes.
of course, I'm in Maryland. I'm from Maryland. I grew up with number 52. Ray Lewis, you know, he did. And I love that he brought the squirrel dance out when he came out during the NFL honors when they were being announced. But he was the only lock on the list of the 15 modern era candidates. And guess what? The selectors only spent 6 minutes discussing him. Why? Because he's Ray Lewis. 17 seasons, people. Baltimore loves Ray Lewis. He has a statue outside the M&T Bank Stadium, 31 interceptions, 8 All-Pro selections, 13 Pro Bowls, and 2 Super Bowl rings. I mean, Ray Lewis, I think they said it. That's why they only spent 6 minutes discussing him. I think he definitely had to be the lock on this list. What are your thoughts about Ray Lewis overall?
Yeah. He was a lock, in my opinion, too. And then he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. And like I said, during his playing days with Baltimore, he kind of made me upset a few times. Like I said, I'm a Tennessee Titans fan. And in 2000,
that 2000 defense.
Yes. And he hurt a few guys along the way, whether it was Steve McNair and then Eddie George. And like I said, that 2000 Baltimore Ravens team was basically a defensive-minded team. And I thought
defense won that Super Bowl.
Yeah. And I thought that was Tennessee's year. But, hey, it was part of my college years. And like I said, I don't have nothing but respect for Ray Lewis. And I know that Lewis was polarizing like T.O. And I think that some people probably will remember, you know, Lewis for his alleged involvement with the, you know,
hold
with
on,
the Super
before
Bowl
you get into that, I want you to ask a question. I want to ask you a quick question. Do you think that should still be brought up? I mean, do you think it's like synonymous with his name now, or do people just need to forget that and remember how he was on the football field?
I agree, because the actions on the football field matters most, because I know some people bring out some out his past, but that passion to find a person forever. So, like you said, it's time for people to move on past transgressions, because, like I said, I know a lot of times people put athletes on the pedestal, and like I was saying earlier, that we all human beings, and we're going to make mistakes along the way. So, his alleged involvement, I think that some people should let it go. But, hey, I guess sometimes in our profession, depending on who you are, some people will bring that up.
Right.
Unfortunately.
And unfortunately, it comes with it, honestly. When you're in the celebrity spotlight, everything you do is going to be on the forefront, right? It's going to always be shown. And Ray Lewis, that's going to always, always, always be a part of his life. But I think when we're talking about the Hall of Fame, let's talk about the Hall of Fame. And it's interesting, you know, a lot of people compare him to O.J. in the sense that, you know, whenever you talk about O.J., we talk about the case, right? And it's also interesting because I haven't heard talk, you know, how FX is doing all these series, like they're doing, you know, they did the O.J. Simpson series, that there even might be talk of, and I hope they don't do this, but about Ray Lewis and that whole involvement thing. But I'm like, just keep all that talk out of the books. The man, I mean, what he did on the football field, at his position, he changed the game. So many players respect Ray Lewis. You know, everybody wanted to be Ray Lewis. And again, 17 seasons in the NFL, that is not easy at all, especially when you were playing Ray Lewis's position at linebacker, middle linebacker. So I think Ray Lewis, it's no surprise that he was a sure lock. I thought this was interesting, though. We talk about Terrell Owens. He was actually the longest discussion of the day, 45 minutes, 23 seconds. And then Randy Moss, who also got in, was talked about for 34 minutes and 42 seconds. So Randy Moss, I think everybody was a fan of Randy Moss getting in. He was so emotional, right, when he found out about it. You could tell he really wanted it. He became the first receiver elected on the first ballot since, of course, Jerry Rice, who earned that in 2010. He caught 1,078 passes for 15,934 yards, 153 touchdowns in 16 seasons. That was Owens' numbers, and I want to compare that to Moss's numbers because that was Owens' numbers, and Moss made 982 catches, 15,292 yards, and 156 touchdowns in 14 seasons. So, of course, those are our receivers, but you heard that Owens took the longest, right? And then Moss took the second longest. So just kind of compare those two for me. And why do you think, you know, we talked about Terrell Owens, but why do you think there was so much discussion about Randy Moss when I just read his numbers and they're just as impressive?
I think that Randy Moss, during his NFL career, he just took the NFL by storm his rookie year when he played with the Minnesota Vikings and almost led them for the Super Bowl, you know, appearance in 1998, but came up short at the hands of the Atlanta Falcons. But I think Moss, he was very, very quiet, I think, compared to Terrell Owens. And like I said, he was one of the best wide receivers. And then I guess sometimes when people like Terrell Owens, who generates a lot of controversy and stuff, they get the headlines. But Moss did his thing on and off the field. And like I said, I know that he had a stellar career in New England as well. And then, of course, he played with the Titans for a season. But like I said, Randy Moss is probably like one of those rare athletes that you see once in a lifetime. And like I said, he took the NFL by storm.
Right. He really did. And then Urlacher, of course, was the other one who joined Moss and Lewis as a first ballot Hall of Famer. You can speak so much about Brian Urlacher. He, again, another one who was just magnificent numbers and really changed his position. And people were scared of him. I mean, he well deserved it. And then another person people were talking about was Brian Dawkins, who was in his second year of eligibility, and he's the only player in NFL history to record more than 25 sacks, picks, and forced fumbles. But a lot of people were saying he should have went in last year. They said he was snubbed by voters in 2017. So what do you think about Brian Dawkins getting in this year?
Well-deserved. And I think a lot of times when people get on, you know, get in the Hall of Fame, sometimes there are so many candidates to choose from. And I think that sometimes sports writers sometimes often overlook some of those guys, especially on the defensive end, because I think when you look at the NFL,
right. It's
primarily an offensive-driven league, whether it was Joe Montana, like we was talking about earlier, Randy Moss and Terrell Owens.
Right.
And I think a lot of times that defense is often overlooked because, like I said, there are 11 men on the field at one time in football. You can't see everybody all at one time. So sometimes
right. –
You just have to watch game film and stuff after you watch a football game. And even though the stats are there, but sometimes those players, like I said, with Brian Dawkins often get overlooked. So hopefully with the selection of this year's 2018 Pro Football Hall of Fame class, that some sports writers will look at the line of work instead of what they see on the field. Because like I said, I know it's sports writers and stuff. It's a tough job. And I hopefully they'll bring up the conversation about how they select players moving forward after this year's class.
Right, and I think that's something that everybody wants. And, you know, going into next year's class, there's a lot of great people that will be up. But I think if they explain that better, they won't get so much slack. Because, geez, social media rips them when these selections come out. And another person that I will say on social media that got a lot of talk was Bobby Bethard, who will be inducted into the Hall of Fame as a contributor. He was a fixture, of course, in NFL front offices over his lengthy career where he spent time with the Chiefs, Falcons, Dolphins, the Washington, and the Chargers. He won Super Bowls, of course, with the Washington Redskins under his leadership as general manager. And he was also with the Dolphins for their perfect season back in 1972 as their director of player personnel. So what do you think about Bobby getting into this year's class?
Well-deserved. A person to be in the NFL that long is unbelievable.
Yes.
Because I know, like I said, a lot of times when you look at the NFL, most times they look at the coaches and the players, but it's a lot of front office personnel that make these decisions. And like
right.
I said, and a lot of times most decisions start at the top. And for a person like him to get inducted, it's quite an accomplishment.
Right. I think so. And, well said. In this class, I mean, I want to make this note. The 47 selectors took 8 hours to debate this class, with the inductees getting at least 80% positive votes. So make sure to note that. So 8 hours to debate the class that we got. But something I also want to note is that it was the 20th and final year of eligibility for Walls and Jacoby, with both of them now going into the seniors pool. So, of course, I'm talking about Joe Jacoby and Everson Walls. I will make that note again. It was the 20th and final year of eligibility for Walls and Jacoby. So what do you think about that, with them going into the seniors pool? Do you think that, I mean, a lot of people here in D.C., quite frankly, Carvis thought Joe Jacoby was snubbed this year. But, I mean, would you have put him in, and who would you have took off if you would put him in?
Wow. That's
I know that's
question.
A tough one. I just threw it at you.
I know, because I didn't see that one coming, but I guess,
You don't have to put him in, but if you did put him in, I just want to know who would you take off that list.
I think the second person that you said.
The second person I said? Oh,
yes.
Are you saying you would put Joe Jacoby in or Everson Walls in?
Yeah, Joe Jacoby.
Okay, so you would put Joe Jacoby in, and then who would you take off the list? You have Moss, Lewis, Urlacher, Dawkins, Owens, Kramer, Brazil, and Bethard.
I think Kramer I'd probably take off.
So I hope you know just now, everybody in D.C. loves you, and they're going to support you. Because D.C. was very, very, very mad about Joe Jacoby not getting in, and then with that note coming up, I mean, I think he was snubbed, but it's such a hard decision. But, I think a lot of people are behind you, you know. But what he did was incredible. Joe Jacoby, I mean, we're all like, come on. Like, what are y'all not seeing that we all see here in D.C.?
And I guess being a D.C. legend sometimes, I guess other beat writers who covered the NFL beat for a long time probably overlooked it because, you know, he probably did a lot of work for the Redskins fan base and everything. But I guess on the national spotlight, he was probably not one of those players that was kind of like known nationally. So, like I said, hopefully some of these sports writers, once you talk to people when they go to different cities and stuff about the line of work of some of these athletes and everything, hopefully they could think, you know, they'll think about that later on because there's been a lot of great players that's been often overlooked when it comes down to Hall of Fame selection.
Yep. I completely agree. Now, real quick before we end the show, because, oh my gosh, it's been such a fabulous, fun show with you, Carvis, I want to quickly talk about Duke in Kansas getting knocked out of the top five in college basketball rankings. So if you were watching college basketball Saturday, you probably thought it was just going to be another boring Saturday in college basketball because the matchups, you're like, okay, there's no big games going on. But guess what? Kansas lost at home to Oklahoma State as a 12-point favorite. And then if that wasn't enough, Duke lost to St. John's as an 11-point favorite, a St. John team that, yes, has been struggling. And then, of course, late night, Arizona lost to Washington. So Saturday, Carvis, it was crazy in college basketball. But what do you think now about Kansas and Duke being knocked out of the top five? And now they're still in the top ten. I'll make that note. But what did you think about them losing?
Well, any team can be beat on any given day. Actually, when I got into work Saturday afternoon, when I saw the Duke-St. John's game, I was actually impressed with St. John's performance because even though St. John's, you know, they don't have a great record, but sometimes I've learned over the years that some teams match up well against certain opponents. And I guess, and like you said, with Kansas getting knocked by OK State, sometimes when you play somebody in your conference, sometimes you get a chance to play them, you know, once or twice a season. Sometimes teams will match up well. And like I said, a lot of times some of these rosters and stuff, they have players and stuff that's played 2 years or longer. And then some of those one and done people, you know, guys, they play sometimes the chemistry, sometimes it's not as intact and stuff. You play against well-experienced teams. So like I said, I'm not shocked about what happened Saturday with Duke and Kansas and then Arizona. But like I say, we're in February, so we got the NCAA tournament coming up next month and everything. So a lot of these teams and so get these losses, even though they still in the top 10, Duke and Kansas. But like I said, hopefully they tune up for March Madness and get ready for the conference tournament in the next, you know, few weeks. So sometimes having a loss like that is not a bad thing because you can mentally focus on your miscues and everything. And hopefully they will learn from that. And then hopefully Duke, Kansas, and, you know, they will, you know, propel and I guess win their conference tournament, get hopefully a higher seed in the NCAA tournament. But as we've seen in the past, having a higher seed doesn't mean anything when it comes down to tournament time.
Right, and I think that's what's important to remember. But, of course, these games were big, and I think, honestly, that's what makes college basketball fun. We love these upset games. And let's be honest, Duke is literally like the New England Patriots. Duke has a lot of haters. So when Duke lost, that went rampant. You know, I'm a Terp, so, you know, I had a little bias. When Duke lost, I was inside clapping a lot, even though they're not our foes anymore in the ACC. But, you know, people love seeing Duke go down, and, of course, they did. But they are still in the top 10 with the new AP top 10. Villanova is still number one. Virginia, number two. Purdue, number three. Michigan State, four. Xavier, five. Cincinnati, six. Texas Tech, seven. Auburn, eight. Duke, nine. And Kansas, 10. So they just rounded out the top 10. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But I have to give it to you. What a week in sports it's been. And the crazy thing and now is that it's only Wednesday. It's hard to believe that. But, Carver, thank you so much for joining me on this show. I hope you had a blast. And thanks for giving us your insight.
Yes, thank you so much, Kelsey. I want to say, too, that it was an honor to meet you this past summer at the National Association of Black Journalists Convention in New Orleans. And I've been following you over the last few months, and I must say that I'm very proud of you and keep up the great work that you're doing in the DMV area. You have a bright future ahead of you. So keep on grinding, and like I said, keep up the great work, and hopefully I will be able to see you again in the near future.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure meeting you in person. I'm so glad to have you on my show. And for everyone listening, that's a wrap for this edition of Listen In with K&N. I hope you had fun, learned something, and, of course, jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every week for new shows that drop online at foxsports1340am.com and kelseynicolenelson.com. If that's not enough, the show is available for download on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Until later this week when I welcome in ESPN's Mike Wise. Enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously because there's always another play.
Advertisement and sponsorship opportunities are now available for Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio, WHAP. Become a part of the hottest new sports talk show in the nation's capital, fueled by one of the largest national sports radio networks. Hosted by award-winning sports personality Kelsey Nicole Nelson, Listen In with KNN brings listeners the latest trending topics in sports and in entertainment each week. So if you're looking to maximize your brand's exposure alongside the best local and national sports coverage, plus special live editions of Listen In with K&N from venues around the region, email Kelsey at kelseynelson@foxsports1340am.com. For more information about Listen In with K&N, visit foxsports1340am.com.